Good morning and welcome to Crawford Stewardship Project Radio. I am your host, Joseph Childs. I'm also the agriculture coordinator for Crawford Stewardship Project. And you can listen to this show as well as many others on WDRT 91.9 FM. And if you're looking for past episodes or some podcasts that you want to listen to, you can find those on WDRT.org. Today, I am sitting down with Forrest Yonke, a friend and co-worker of mine, and is the programs coordinator for Crawford Stewardship Project. And currently, Forrest is phoning in, so please give us some grace on audio as we try and figure this out. This is our flagship program. This is the very first one, so we're still going to iron out some things in the process. So today, we want to talk a little bit about what is Crawford Stewardship Project, what is its function, and you know how long it's been around and what it does for the surrounding communities. And really, Forrest is the best person for this. I've been with the organization about 2 years, a little over 2 years, but Forrest has been there for over a decade. So he is a wealth of knowledge and a bit of a historian for CSP. So Forrest, hope that was a good intro for you. And want to talk a little bit about your background with CSP and what it is.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Joe, and glad to be here, and really appreciate WDRT for giving us the airtime and studio space to make this happen. So, as for what is Crawford Stewardship Project, technically, legally, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We've been around for 17 years. And as a nonprofit, we work towards a vision of empowered communities and sustainable relationship with thriving ecosystems.
That's an amazing and very lofty vision. And I know that's the part of being a 501c3 is you want to have that really perfect vision that drives the organization and that helps describe your organization and what it is to people, that if they're just going to check out the vision, they should be able to understand exactly how the organization sees things and what they want to see. So we'll talk a little bit more about your position within CSP. How long have you been around? I know CSP has been around for 17 years, but how long have you been with the organization, Forrest?
So I've been the programs coordinator now for 11 and a half years.
That is some dedication to this. Me being 2 years in, that's, it's seeing how these things function. It can get sort of mind-numbing at sometimes, but to be in an organization like this for 11 years, it's really commendable to see your dedication to this. So is this something that you saw yourself doing in your past? Like, is this something that you always knew you would want to go to, or how did you end up with the organization?
Yeah, to some extent, yes. I've been very passionate about our environment and our water and the beautiful hills and valleys that we grew up in ever since I was a young child, and have been helping Rob Horwich, who was one of our founding members of the organization, with Community Conservation International since I was a kid. I kind of wanted to follow in his footsteps. I also fell in love with the ocean at a young age, and so I ended up going to college in Florida, where I thought I was going to be a marine scientist until I ended up switching my major over to communications and international relations. I also worked with a whole bunch of different organizations down there, including some really inspiring farmer-led organizations like the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, working on rights for the tomato pickers in Florida. So this has really been my passion from a young age, and I feel very lucky and privileged to now be employed to do this full time and to have that opportunity.
It sounds like this was kind of a perfect match, but it also sounds like you had a lot of other opportunities. So what initially attracted you to this organization and not one of the other organizations that you had been working with or had more experience with? What drew you to CSP specifically?
So in part, as I mentioned, I knew some of the founding members like Rob and Edie Ehler, who's our current board president, Lamar and Ellen, and a bunch of the core members since I have memory. I've known them and really appreciated the work they did. I even did an interview with Edie when I was in college about some of the work they were doing down here. When I moved back to the area in 2013, I was doing some farm work with Driftless Organics, picking and packaging vegetables for market. This position opened up, and I happened to be actually attending CSP board meetings out of personal interest at that time. And so, yeah, between the synchronicity of the position opening up and that really matching with my passion for the issues, it did seem really perfect, and I was lucky enough to get the job.
Yeah, that seemed like it worked out well for everybody involved there, especially you'd already been attending board meetings, and that's a really powerful thing to be able to step in and know what's going on within the organization, and then that matches up with your passion. That it's something that not a lot of people get to say about the job that they end up taking. So I want to talk a little bit more about CSP and what are some of the things, if you want to, pick out one thing that maybe is a reoccurring theme that happens throughout CSP's work, and could you describe that a little bit and how it affects the work?
Yeah, so one thing that really ties into everything else is our focus on education about the local hydrogeology, so our bedrock and how the water moves through it. And that's important because it has implications for anything we do here on the surface. So if you think of the landscape here, the rolling hills, the valleys, I mean, the surface topography is already a challenging place to work and manage land and water. And then underground, it's even more complex, where we have this whole interconnected fracture pattern of caves and sinkholes connecting to underground rivers and tunnels and fractures. And so water can really move very quickly through the landscape without much for filtration or mitigation and go directly into the groundwater. So we've really focused on that from the beginning. We also monitor the surface waters and do well testing and have really advocated for these things to be deeply considered in a broad swath of issues, from industrial agriculture to frac sand mining to water extraction and high capacity wells for international sale to slaughter plants and high capacity transmission lines and the whole gambit of issues over the years, where we've really tried to make sure these important considerations are being brought to the table and in a good scientific way, as well as including the people on the ground who are most affected.
So I think a little bit of what I'm hearing there is that, Crawford County and its surrounding areas, mostly the Driftless area, is what we refer to it as, of southwest Wisconsin, southeast Minnesota, a little bit of northwest Illinois, and then northeast Iowa. That whole little micro region of the U.S. is different than, the rest of those states, the geology in the rest of those states. So when you think about it, that would mean that different land uses have different effects on, say, Milwaukee area or northern Wisconsin versus how it would affect us here in the Driftless area. So I'm really glad to see that Crawford Stewardship Project is using a science-based approach to tackling these projects instead of Just maybe I don't want this because I feel like it shouldn't be here. It's more like it's something that could affect us differently than across the rest of the state or across the rest of the country. So we really need to sit down and confirm with experts that this is something good for the area and know exactly how it's going to affect us in the long run, and not just kind of going off half-cocked on some of these things. If that's exactly what you're trying to say, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the decision making part of it. So we touched a little bit on the local control and local decision making. So what is CSP doing in that arena to encourage people to get out there and learn a little bit more about the process in which these decisions are made?
Yeah, so decisions are being made all the time somewhere. And I know that it's not always the most appealing thing to get involved in contentious issues, but we really believe in local participatory democracy and want to bring people, especially those who are going to be most impacted, into these decision-making processes. So we work on the local level as much as possible. We encourage everyone to attend your local township meetings and village meetings and city meetings and county meetings as well, and those don't get a lot of attention. There's a lot of focus on the state level and the national level, and I don't want to minimize the importance of that either, because it is important, but we recognize that we can have much more of an impact on the local level and can actually have nonpartisan, respectful conversations with our neighbors about the water that we're all drinking and the land that we're all eating from. And by the time you get into the higher levels of government, it gets more and more challenging to do that. So we are involved at the state level sometimes and even the national level. And a lot of that ends up being trying to make sure that local control is protected and that we can make decisions at the local level, and making sure that the rules and regulations on the books are not just some one-size-fits-all thing that sees the whole state in the same way, but respect the local uniqueness and individual sensitivities that we have.
This sounds like incredibly important work, and you mentioned that Crawford Stewardship Project is a 501c3 nonprofit. So instead of being able to generate profit to fund the next year's operations, generally 501c3 nonprofits are reliant upon grant funding or donations. And CSP is no different. We're reliant upon that. And so I wanted to talk a little bit more about how CSP has stuck around for 17 years. For those that don't know, in the nonprofit world, especially small nonprofits such as CSP, with less than 5 employees throughout its entire history, pretty much, that's a pretty good run. 17 years is a pretty good run for a very hyper local organization. So, how has CSP sustained itself for those 17 years?
I think in large part, we have a lot to a lot of people to thank who have put in massive amounts of time and energy as volunteers for this organization. For the first years of the organization, almost everything was done on a volunteer basis until we were able to start getting some more funding coming in to sustain ourselves and grow our capacity and grow our impact. So through the generous donations of time and also just individual grassroots funding by the local community at all levels, that has been our bread and butter from the beginning. And we have also gotten some grants here and there that's been a helpful supplemental funding for specific projects with concrete deliverables, some of our community science efforts and creating a Karst Kids book and things like that. Grants are very helpful for that, but we're really reliant on the generosity of the local community and our grateful that they appreciate and value our work enough to keep funding us and keep us working on the issues that the community has identified as important.
So when you talk about the generosity of the local community, are we talking 5 to 10 donors, 10 to 50, or 100 plus? What sort of landscape is the donors of CSP? What makes that up?
Yeah, generally we're talking 100 plus. In our newsletter every year, we put out a list of all our donors who have given to us, minus a few who prefer to remain anonymous, and we'll of course respect that. But we really rely on a very broad-based support from a lot of people at all levels, whether that's $10 or $50 or $1,000. It all helps, and it all lets us keep working on the issues and paying staff to do that. And it's been a long process of growth and tweaking and building our capacities to the point where we're not only able to do our work, but able to support other organizations in doing their work and launch other organizations as well.
Yeah, this seems like something that is really working for the surrounding community and something that people are wanting to have. Obviously, if you've got hundreds of donors, then it's not just one or two people being able to push their weight around. It's really a grassroots sort of thing, and not in the way as a buzzword that often gets thrown around now. A truly grassroots local organization, and I'm very proud to work for it, and really happy for those donors. It helps me get through the winter months when I'm not farming. So, I really appreciate those people that reach out every year and help us out. So we've talked a lot about the karst education that you do here at CSP, and one of the really memorable moments this past summer was our karst field trip. Lots of people there. I mean, we packed out the Soldiers Grove Library to the point where it was standing room only, and a couple people weren't even able to get in. We had such a good attendance for that event, and then we took a field trip out to one of the pastures that I rent outside of Soldiers Grove. And this isn't a really rare thing to have, a property with multiple springs on it, but it was a very beautiful property. But we had that field trip then and talked about the springs that happen because of this karst geology. And can you dive in a little bit more on how that karst geology really leads to that, and talk a little bit more about that field trip?
Yeah, we have these every year and have for over a decade. Every year I like to pick out a somewhat different loop to take of different karst features, be those springs, caves, sinkholes, karst towers. There's a lot of really interesting and educational features on this landscape, and they're really ubiquitous. They're really everywhere. So it's fun to put those together and bring in experts. For many, many years, Kelvin Rodolfo, who's a professor emeritus from the University of Chicago, lives just north of Viroqua, has been really critical to our work on this front and was our main presenter for many years. He stepped back a few years ago and I filled in for a bit, and then last year we actually brought in our new state geologist to come and talk about the springs, which is really great. And Sue Swanson is her name. She was excellent and has lots of good information, and we plan to keep doing this every year and just keep this drumbeat going about karst geology and really getting that into the common vernacular. And I think it is starting to get there, where these days if you say karst, people have at least somewhat of a basic understanding that it means that there's sinkholes and these sort of direct conduits into groundwater, that we live on a sort of Swiss cheesy landscape where everything flows more quickly than it would in a different landscape. So that's been something that we were definitely going to keep focusing on. We're going to keep putting out these events and hope to bring in more and more people.
Yeah, I really enjoyed attending the event and kind of leading the show on the Springs, just because I understood the pasture there, the property, because I was renting and I spent every day there moving cattle and stuff. So it was nice to show people the sort of thing that you get to experience when you have a job that takes you outdoors and gets you out in this beautiful nature that surrounds us here in the Driftless area. And honestly, I had an understanding of why we had so many springs, a very rudimentary understanding. But as far as karst, if you would have asked me that prior to my working here at CSP, I probably would not have been able to explain it very well. And CSP has really brought that to the forefront of my mind, and I'm able to sit down with others and explain, you know, why do we do the work that we do here at CSP? And it's because we are unique and we are different, and I think people are starting to really realize that because we have more and more people moving out to this beautiful area, and that's a great thing. You know, it's great to have new members of our communities, but we're just trying to make sure that people that are operating businesses or come to live out here understand that we do know that this is a special place, and that's why people want to live here. But it also comes with, you know, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword where it's very, very beautiful, but it's also very sensitive, so we have to take care of what we have out here. And explaining karst to people is one of the ways that you can justify the work that we are doing, because it is such a beautiful yet sensitive place. And we get to live here and take advantage of the beautiful things that it offers, but it comes with that responsibility of protecting it as well. And so we learned a little bit more, or we talked a lot about springs and a lot about water. And one of, I think, CSP's flagship programs is the water quality monitoring program. And it is really, really impressive to me and to a lot of others, the amount of work that Crawford Stewardship Project has done in that field and with such a small staff. And by small staff, I mean we have one person. It's Omaru, who does the water quality monitoring, and she's an absolute powerhouse at it and really knows what she's doing. But could you explain a little bit more about what the water quality monitoring program is? What does it mean to monitor the quality of surface water?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we work through the Water Action Volunteers Program, which is a joint program between the Wisconsin DNR and UW Extension. So all of the data that we produce goes up on the public database and helps serve the general scientific purposes of improving the information we have on the quality of our waters. Our program goes above and beyond the basic parameters under that program, which include things like dissolved oxygen and temperature, and macroinvertebrates, which are the little critters that live in the streams. And we've also included, on our own dime, working with five different labs, analysis of different pathogens, coliforms, E. coli, Staph aureus.
Do you mind if I jump in and ask you a question a little bit more about that? Because it seems like you have a very good understanding of this. And for someone like me who I haven't gotten out there yet to do it, I really plan on helping out this next summer. So why are we monitoring these things? What is it that, like, I understand the things that you're monitoring are probably indicators of water health, but why should somebody care how much E. coli or coliform bacteria are in their water, or how much phosphorus is in their water? What does that mean to the average consumer of, be it drinking or recreational use, what does that mean to the average person that uses that surface water?
Yeah, so I guess we can start with phosphorus. That's one of the really important parameters to test for in our surface waters. And phosphorus is a normal, naturally occurring nutrient. However, when it gets to high levels, it's the main nutrient that's going to be causing eutrophication, so algae blooms, and our water is getting green and scummy and impassable and stinky when it dies, and that causes the decomposition of that causes the oxygen to get sucked out of the water, which can have negative impacts for the trout and the other things living in the water. And as far as the pathogens like E. coli and Staph aureus, and those things are generally not something you would want to drink if you're going to be swimming in or canoeing in these waters, or if your cattle are drinking from stream water. You know, these are things that we are exposed to at low levels all the time, and to a certain extent are natural. However, at high levels, and we have many times found levels far beyond the standard and what they should be at in a healthy stream, that starts to be a health concern for the human population as well as trout and other things that rely on the streams here.
Yeah, that now that you broke it down a little bit, you know, I can understand that obviously you don't want a huge bacteria number in your water. But breaking down the phosphorus mm-hmm. thing and that cycle, like what does it mean if phosphorus is high? And it is a little bit of a butterfly effect, because that's an input for algae blooms, and algae blooms are not great, but it's even worse once it dies and it sucks the oxygen out. Now you've got everything that lives in that water that depends on that oxygen is going to be struggling. So I appreciate you breaking that down for someone who, like me, doesn't have a great understanding of it. And then can you just briefly explain some of the sources for this? Why would we see elevated levels of bacteria or phosphorus in our surface waters?
Yeah, so the phosphorus is generally from runoff. So that's it's a nutrient that's going to get attached to the soil. We call it, it's a sticky nutrient. It has a slow cycle. But when it does get into the water, it has a big impact on it downstream. And I mean, when we're talking about the oxygen being deprived from the water, we're talking impacts all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico. And people might have heard of the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, and we're contributing to that. And we want to minimize that effect as well, not just for the local health and local people, but you know, we recognize that we have downstream impacts as well.
Well, Forrest, I have to cut you off there. We are actually out of time here, and we've got tons and tons of stuff to discuss in the future, and it's impossible to get that all in a half-hour show. So we thank you guys mm-hmm. for listening on the radio here, and if you're looking at this on WDRT.org, thanks for stopping by. This has been our first radio show ever, and we will continue to do this every month. And you can find future episodes on WDRT.org. You've been listening to WDRT 919 Radio from the Driftless in Viroqua. I've been Joseph Childs, the Agriculture Coordinator for Crawford Stewardship Project, and I've been sitting down here today with the Programs Coordinator for Crawford Stewardship Project, Forrest Ionke. And we've talked about a lot of different things that CSP does, and we still haven't covered everything. But if you want to tune in for our future shows, we will dive more into that. So I wanted to thank you, Forrest, for calling in, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Joe, and looking forward to doing more of these.
And once again, this has been our very first broadcast, so give us a little bit of grace on this. And if you've got some feedback, you can check us out on CrawfordStewardship.org. Or stop by WDRT.org to find this episode and more. Thanks a lot, and have a nice day.